got your EE signature beanies on tight, my friends, because we're getting geeky. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEjournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, your hostess with the mostest. And folks, first off, we are headed into the land of field programmable gate arrays, high-level synthesis, and software developers? Wait. What? Please welcome Max Odendahl from Selexica. Max and I are talking about system-level understanding and optimization, the biggest challenges in using software, C and C++ specifically, for hardware design, and how, yes, you guessed it, how my software engineering audience, I know you're out there, can use HLS and the power and performance of FPGAs. Let's go. Hi, Max. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first off, for my audience who may not know, what is Selexica all about?
Selexica is a startup from Germany. We started 4 years ago on the premise that software development for future computing systems will be exploding in, you know, complexity. Could be FPGAs, could be future multi-core system, heterogeneous systems. The hardware complexity explodes, and with it, the software complexity explodes. As well. So we are using compiler technology to analyze your source code in order to fully understand a system. We believe if you don't understand, you know, how a software is behaving at runtime, using that and driving optimizations, you're, you know, just doing best effort or educated guesses, but you're not really understanding, you know, the full picture. But we are the only company, I believe, who's using both static analysis, dynamic analysis, combining that to get that, you know, system level understanding and then driving optimization for, you know, specific hardware systems such as FPGAs.
Okay, so we're talking about FPGAs, HLS, and using C and C++ code for hardware design. So let's start with that last one first, Max. What do you think are the biggest challenges in using C and C++ for hardware design?
Well, I think there are two key components. One is only a subset of that, you know, C, C++ code is actually supported to put it on hardware, right? Which could be an FPGA, could be an ASIC. So not every code is synthesizable. Not every code maps to hardware. Some code is not even supported at all. Once you start with that kind of designs, you're probably not even aware of it. The second component is even if you have code that is supported, there's no magic. Once you've written the code, you press a button and you're done. It maps well to hardware. No, you need to tell, you know, DHLS tool in this example, where there's parallelism, right? How to access your data, tell the tool, you know, about dependencies, tell them about unroll factors and a lot of much more stuff. But that's very far away from how a software engineer thinks.
So more in the realm of FPGAs, you guys just announced a really interesting partnership with Xilinx. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, so we have been working closely with Xilinx, and they spend a lot of time with us, for which we're, you know, very thankful. I think they like what we're doing. I think they support that, and that just leads to interesting joint opportunities. So, for example, we've been an early access partner for the new unified development environment called Vitis that was announced a couple of weeks ago at the XDF show in San Jose. We've been a diamond sponsor at all XDF shows around the world. The next one is coming up next week in Den Haag, actually, in the Netherlands. And we've already started doing joint customer visits. We're running towards a common goal of trying to help the customer use HLS and utilize FPGAs for a huge speed up compared to other hardware platforms. So I think it aligns very well, and that's, you know, where you see those early collaborations, let's say.
Okay, so even more in the FPGA arena, you guys have a tool that will help me get my C and C++ code into an FPGA, right? What does this tool really buy me as an engineer?
Yeah, good question. So as I mentioned, there are a couple of issues with, you know, using C, C++ to program an FPGA. High-level synthesis, HLS, has been around for a couple of years, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years, but it hasn't still, you know, it's not on fire, so to speak. And there are a couple of reasons, right? One is you need to convert your non-synthesizable code to make it synthesizable. You need to identify the parallelism in your code and drive the tool to recognize that type of parallelism. You need, if you want to do it manually, you need some kind of system level optimization, right? When do I use pipeline? When do I use unroll? What are the unroll factors? And that might be all you know, I think it's hard, but even if you say that not hard for a hardware engineer who knows what he is doing that for one function or one loop, maybe that's easy. But now think about optimizing an unroll factor for hundreds to thousands of loops. Nobody can tell me they can actually do that. You know, that system level optimization is the next challenge. And then you need to insert those pragmas, which are basically compiler directives in order to tell the HLS compiler, you know, what to do and how to map that C++ code into an FPGA bitstream. So those are the four big challenges, and those are exactly the ones we address. So we help you to convert non-synthesizable code. In some cases, we can do it automatically. In some cases, you know, we give you very detailed guidance and what you should be doing. We automatically identify parallelism for you from very fine-grained to very coarse-grained parallelism. We do the system-level optimization for you. And then at the end, we auto-insert the required pragmas. So there are around 25 different pragmas for Xilinx, Vivado HLS, and then Vitis HLS in the future. There are three more pragmas they're adding, and we can automatically insert them for you. You know, the goal is not just to be a productivity tool and automating some of the stuff, what an experienced hardware guy would do right now, but really enable a new group of users, enable really software engineers to use HLS and to use FPGA.
Okay, cool. Well, Max, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, before on Fish Fry, we talked about basketball, so we're doing that again. Now, I know you're a big Dallas Mavericks fan, so is there a player on the court today in this brand new basketball season that you've got your eye on?
So Dirk is gone, so I needed to find a new guy. But yeah, I think Luka Doncic of Dallas, I think it's pretty amazing. He's, I don't know, 22 or 23. He just got his second triple-double in a row. And yeah, it's his second season, so I think it's pretty mind-blowing. But in general, like, it's going to be an amazing season. There are so many good teams. Nobody knows, you know, who's going to win it. It's not going to be the Warriors this time. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting season.
I agree it's going to be an interesting season, and at least it won't be the Golden State Warriors again. Fingers crossed. Well, Max, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks so much for having me again.
Here on Fish Fry, we love a good 3D printed story. I've done at least some two-digit number of stories on 3D printing over the almost 10 years that Fish Fry has been on the air. Seriously, you guys, I stopped counting at 15. And this week, we're adding to that pile in grand form. With a little help from Kickstarter Corner and Houston-based team Electronic Alchemy. Please let me introduce you to the eForge. The first 3D printer capable of printing fully functional electronics. Okay, so there are two pretty unique aspects at the heart of the eForge, the extruders and the filaments. Now, first, the extruders. Most electronics are produced by three or four different materials normally. The eForge uses eight independently controlled retractable smart extruders that use automatic speed and oscillation controls to reduce material contamination. They say it effortlessly brings all of your designs to life in a single print without worrying about your design's complexity or constantly changing materials. Interesting. Now, let's talk about those filaments. That's some secret sauce right there. eForge includes six different patented filaments, including conductive, insulative, capacitive, resistive, N-type semiconductive, and P-type semiconductive properties. And get this, these filaments were actually developed after years of university research and an initial funding from NASA. Yes, NASA. All right, so right now, these six filaments can currently print macroscopic components, circuits, and sensors. But the Electronic Alchemy team contends that they are constantly developing and experimenting with new materials to bring even more functionality to the eForge. With the addition of cooling fans and precision nozzle openings, these custom filaments are able to exit through the eForge's controlled systems with what they claim is a quality print every time. Now I hear you loud and clear, but Amelia, where does my solder gun come into play here? Well, no problem. The eForge conductor material is compatible for soldering as well. But wait, there's more. With eForge, you can not only print electronic components, but like I said before, sensors as well, also luminescence, and you can even print on fabrics. And Electronic Alchemy has made three different versions of the eForge, depending on what area of the world you live in. Now, if you back this Kickstarter campaign, and after the eForge is shipped, you can get help anytime you want with a dedicated 24/7 toll-free number, which I would probably use. All right, so small print time. You've only got until November 21st to back this campaign. And this bad boy ain't cheap, my friends. Sure, you can go the $25 route and get a t-shirt, or you can pledge $10 and get a reseller request form to sell eForge in your store. But if you really, really want one of these super cool electronics printing machines, it's going to set you back almost $5,000. $47.99 to be exact. The early bird pledges of only $3,999 are sold out now, sadly. So maybe you aren't ready to plunk down a good chunk of change on this Kickstarter campaign. I totally understand. But if you want more information about this project, about those patented filaments they're using, or the technical details of eForge, super cool, all of it, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Okay, HLS, check. 3D printed electronics, check. And now, 5G, that's right. Now, if we like it or not, we are all on a bullet train to 5G. Now, maybe 5G isn't happening everywhere just yet, but it's certainly not just a promise anymore. A ramp up to full-scale 5G deployment is happening all around the world, and we better get ready. But if you're like me, there is still a lot about 5G that is downright confusing. So where do we start? Well, we might as well start at the beginning, all the way down to the small cells themselves. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk called Small Cell 5G Systems, I sit down with Suma Kapilavai of Qorvo and talk all about how we can tackle the variety of massive MIMO and beamforming challenges that 5G implementation brings to small cell design. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal. It's right across the top. You can click the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, or just head on over to youtube.com/EEJournal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of November 8th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.